This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni, and today is November 5th, 2019. Whoa, it's December 10th, 2019. We've got some great guests joining us tonight to talk about new beer brands of 2019. Let's just go around the room and introduce everybody.
Hello, I am Gage from Non Sequitur Beer Project. At my feet is Nelson, our canine mascot, who might shake off during, but he doesn't talk much.
So this is a pretty interesting show. So Gage, you reached out to me a while ago and you said we're going to do the new breweries or beer brands of New York City.
As many as we could get.
And you have quite a crew. So let's see who else is here today.
Hey, this is Tara Hankinson from Talaya Beer Company. I'm the co-founder.
I'm Johnny Osborne. I'm the head brewer of Talaya Beer Company.
And I'm so happy to meet you guys. Since last spring, you guys have been reaching out. You've done so many things. You've done Beer Without Beards. You even interacted with Origin Malt. We had a great malt and grain show this summer. So it's nice to meet you guys finally. And another brand is here.
Yeah, howdy. I'm Eric Schultz, and I'm one of the co-founders of the Little Blend Beer.
Thank you. Yeah. So, Gage, let's talk. You've kind of become the, I don't know, Pied Piper of... new brewery brands.
My head, it's expanding. Soon we will burst out onto all of Roberta's outside. I was with Beer Menus, which is, I think, the joke you're making. Still do it during the day. But I came in dead last at 2019 Brewery. These guys all beat me this year, as well as Public Access and Free Thought, who aren't here with us. But... It's a fun place, a fun city to be doing beer in, and a really crowded market with a lot of local brands who have a home and are here and have been here for a long time. So I think it's a really interesting subject and to talk about why we all decided to do this right now. And I don't know, being the last one, I figured I'm the kid as far as is all concerned. So I wanted to get all my friends together and talk about it.
And did you also put together an event at As Is recently?
Yeah. So when I launched, because what I do is, because I don't have a tap room, and instead of just not having one, I do pop-ups. So I take over non-traditional spaces. I do events, lots of events. And every beer gets a charity. So I donate a portion of the proceeds to a charitable organization. So with the first launch, the first beer, I wanted to do a ton of parties. I think we did, like, Johnny, what was it, like 15? You were at a lot. Johnny came out. Johnny showed up.
I tried to be at a lot of those things.
Yeah, he's good. And so one that I
Johnny
wanted to
Osborne.
Do...
Osborne. Love that name.
I wanted to get the whole crew together, right? Because, I mean, in the end, we're all taking this journey together. We all are coming from the same place into this exact same market, selling almost all of our beer in New York City, all three of us, and the other two predominantly as well. So it was a good opportunity to get everybody together.
Let's get everybody's backstory. So you guys all love beer. That's the thing. I feel like we're kind of at a new dawning of the New York City craft beer, where you guys are new brands. You've got experience in business and marketing, but you love beer, and some of you have made beer and worked in beer. So let's start with you, Eric, Little Blind. Tell us what we're drinking, and quick backstory on you, because I know you love beer, and you're really interested in this new brand. So
yeah, definitely. My background in beer, I mean, started, I kind of always say this, but my kind of coming of age in beer was in the mid-2000s in San Diego. I'm from the West Coast. So kind of what I always say is I didn't drink Natty Light in college. We were drinking, you know, Alesmith IPA and Stone Arrogant Bastards. That was just very much the culture there. A lot of people were getting into home brewing, so I did as well. Post-college, I went into finance, so that's where I had been working for the last 6 or 7 years, and then a couple years peeled off and did another project in beer. And so then me and the other co-founder, who's the true beer knowledge behind it.
We love you, Drew.
Yeah, exactly. Who I believe is listening in right now. But his background, he's a microbiologist, worked at New Belgium, came up in the quality program there, which has a pretty great storied sour program. And then went over to Brooklyn, where he was the director of quality, kind of built out the souring program
there.
What
are we drinking right
now? Yeah. So right now, just kind of to play on that point, a lot of Drew's beer interests is along the souring side. And so kind of taking some of the big, I guess the infatuation with these kind of new wave hops right now and combining that with a sour ale. So, but people are calling it a sour IPA. So we've done a lot of that, but also doing some fruited sours.
No, that's great. Yeah. We're going to talk a lot more to you. Now I want to get Tara in from Talaya. Tell us your backstory, because we're building up to this. There's a new dawn coming in New York City beer, and you guys are part of it.
Yeah, so I met my co-founder, Leanne Darland, who is currently at the New York City Brewers Guild meeting and couldn't be here. We met at a beer e-commerce startup called Hopsy, where we had both left our corporate careers in tech and media to get closer to the beer industry, because we always knew, at least years before then, we had an interest in beer. I had worked at a winery for a summer out in the Hamptons, and so I was interested in hospitality and the creativity in the beer community, and the fact that I thought there really doesn't exist an experience like a winery experience in the beer world, where you're focused on education, tours, private events, and really creating an upscale hospitality experience. So that's where my original kernel of the idea of getting into beer started. Leanne and I have both homebrewed in the past, and then we just started researching the market, as MBAs do, and thought that there was a great opportunity in New York. New York's still an undersaturated market for beer. And within July 2018, we started working on this project, and within a few weeks, we knew we needed a real brewer on board. Our home brewing skills wouldn't cut it, so that's when we first reached out to Johnny.
Well, I think that's where I'm going with this, is that, and you guys have, I feel like now the background, the barrier to entry is much higher than it used to be. I mean, you have interest in beer, but you have to be able to get capital. You have to have some better sense of how to run a business and how to put it together. And you also then need to be able to, you have experienced brewers like, you know, Johnny here. Let's go on that. Let's talk more about that. Where you guys feel like you are, because I feel like 10 years ago, 12 years ago, it wasn't the case. You could open a garage brewery and start building your brand that way as a hands-on brewer.
Yeah, especially in New York, I think the amount of capital that you need to get a company off the ground, especially if you're building a physical space, it's just so monumental and there's so much risk involved. So I think like most of the folks here and the other two new freshman class breweries who couldn't be here, we started with contract brewing as a way to both test the market, get a product out there, build up the reputation of our name, and then also to prove to investors that we can make great beer and sell it. And so that was a much easier way than, you know, putting down a couple $1 million to immediately open our own space. But since getting our product in market in April, we have been fundraising, and we just signed a lease on a space in Williamsburg. So we will be going the traditional and the most profitable avenue in the beer industry, which is having your own physical space where you're both brewing that beer and
what's
selling.
What street is that on?
So it's the address is 87 Richardson Street in Williamsburg. It's right on the corner of Richardson Street and Leonard.
It's right near New York Distilling.
Yep, and a block south of McCarran Park.
So. That's nice. I need a brewery closer to my apartment because I think you saved me like 3 blocks as opposed to going to Inner Brewer or Grimm. So that's great. Thank you guys so much. That's what
again,
I need.
Everything for you, Gage.
Well, I don't have a space. I think, and what's really interesting among the three of us, as well as the other two who couldn't make it, is that we are all approaching this very differently. You guys, Talaya taking the route of opening a tap room. And now, Little Blind, Drew has gone to California. We miss you. Again, we miss you. and you guys are doing it totally differently. You're going to like truly take the nomadic approach to doing things wild. I don't know. I won't speak to what you're doing.
No,
all I do
true.
Is make beer yeah. in New York to mostly yeah. sell in New York. What are you guys doing? I'm asking for me. Forget the audience.
No, yeah, that's totally true. You know, I won't say that like a tap room or something is off the table. I mean, because of our focus on sour, the idea of a fermentary is pretty high on the mind. And just from like a capital expense and yeah, just the way beer has moved, it that model has gotten really interesting. But yeah, our approach is Drew lives out on the West Coast. I'm here on the East Coast and take the true nomadic brewing where we're fine to kind of own that. And we think there's, as been this proliferation of breweries, turns out there's also a lot of capacity out there. So it's kind of a fun thing to hop on the backs of some of this.
So there is, there's a lot of capacities. I know like places like Torch and Crown, there's places to brew. But what about ingredients? So earlier, Johnny, quickly tell us what beer we're drinking, and then we'll ask about the materials that you source.
So right now you're drinking Double Date, which is a hazy double IPA. We're using a variety of like interesting hop products in it. We've got Incognito hops, which are sort of a new type of extract for use in the Whirlpool to add a bunch of aromatic and flavor active compounds to that, as well as cryo hops, which are sort of like a concentrated hop product to allow us to get like even more flavor and aroma into our beer without increasing our vegetal matter. And that's beneficial because there's kind of like an astringent quality that goes along with like continuing to add vegetal matter to beers. And it's a great, you know, tool in our wheelhouse. I think that we're a brewery that we're putting a lot of thought into our supply chain, particularly when it comes to hops. So we have, even though we're only about like, you know, 6 months or so, maybe eight, I'm bad at dates, into making beers.
Your girlfriend loves that. Beyonce. Shoot.
But wow, that threw me off. No. So we're about 6 or 8 months into making beers, but this next release that we've got coming out this week, Cherry Berry Tart Deco, and we're going to taste the precursor to it, Tropic Berry Tart Deco, is our first beer made with our own contracted hops, where we're going in that hop. We don't go technically like direct from farm. We're using a broker, but we know the farmer, and we are.
But then earlier, Tara, you're talking about the need for capital. How complicated is it to get into the supply chain? I'm thinking about I'm a project or a contract brewer.
Such a different.
I want kegs. I want a canning system.
5 years ago, what you do is was impossible. You couldn't do hops this way. You could get kegs this way, but
so you're saying it's easier now than it was
to get raw materials.
I'll let Johnny speak to that, because I think it's a lot about the relationships and just being really interested in making those long-term relationships and partnerships.
So one of the big dynamic for small breweries right now when it comes to raw material sourcing is that like malt is pretty easy to get a hold of. There are a few major distributors that represent the big malt houses. Raw materials are the difficult part, and you can get access to anything you want off of secondary selling as long as it's the right time of year. Sometimes things sell out, but the prices can be like wildly inflated and make it super hard to make beers using certain ingredients, particularly for breweries that are new and don't have contracts built up. Decreasingly, young breweries are contracting their hops in the future. So there was a conversation at the craft beer conference in Denver this year, I should say, a presentation, not a conversation, talking about how less than 50% of new breweries 3 years or under, I want to say the stat was, are now contracting hops due to sort of like some scares that occurred in the industry with over contracting or under contracting of hops. Some major breweries have been really sort of like left in a lurch by having too much or not nearly enough of critical materials. And new breweries are kind of just like making use of these secondary market ingredients. We personally at Talea are trying to take a more cautious approach that we feel is more friendly to our brokers and farmers. So contracting is beneficial to those farmers in that it's a guarantee that you're going to buy it. Like, as long as you don't go broke, you're saying you're going to buy these hops from them in that year. And that lets them know I can plant this crop and I've got something to go from there. It also, I feel like, is beneficial. It's not a totally altruistic thing. It gets me an interaction with the person that knows the product way better than I do. As a brewer, I learn a lot about hops work in beer. I can't possibly know that much about how hops are grown and what the best quality stuff is. And I want to have that relationship with our raw material suppliers so that we can get the best hops and know that we're working with the best ingredients.
But then part of it is you need capital. So you need to kind of know you're going to be in business for a while, and that's an approach you're taking. Tara, tell us, I want to hear a bit about your business background, because you seem to have this whole thing figured out.
Oh.
And your other partner, Leanne, is running for New York City, the Brewers
Guild
board.
Yes.
So you guys are like I'm trying to say, you're this fresh new energy with a little different perspective.
far from having everything figured out. I mean, it still totally throws me when we get a parking ticket when we're doing deliveries because I'm like, that's not in the budget. but I think our path was that we chose to self-fund contract brewing. So being a little older in our early 30s and having worked in the corporate world was very advantageous for us to be able to fund our first few batches and now starting to bootstrap and continuing to brew. When it comes to ingredient sourcing, you know, the market is crowded and I'm really proud of our packaging. I'm really proud of the brand we've built. But at the end of the day, the beer has to stand for itself, especially when it's on draft and someone doesn't have a pretty looking can to gaze into.
I think about that a lot. For all of the work I put into the packaging and then it goes on draft, and you have to hope that like the bar is going to get your description and that the bar is going to say what you want to say about it. Because it's like, oh, you just get a beer with a name that's fun, and then it looks good in a glass or maybe it doesn't meet the consumer's expectation.
For you, why did you start Non Sequitur?
Why did I start Non Sequitur?
And tell us some of the steps you're involved in.
Why did I do this? Good question, man. So I've been in and out of New York City beer for upwards of 5 years in different capacities. And I love the idea of having a brewery, of doing my own thing, the entrepreneurial dream. I think we all have had it one way. We've all done it. We're all doing it. But what I saw in New York City specifically, I mean, in the industry at large, is that a lot of breweries, especially newer brands, don't really stand for anything in particular, aren't trying to do... You either need to have a hook, you need to do something differently, or you need to stand for something, or preferably both. And so I wanted to fill that gap by doing something that matters, why I do the charitable giving attached to every single beer. I don't ever want someone to hear me complain about politics and then say, stay in your lane, because that's been the mission from day one, is that I'm always shouting on about supporting people who are locked out of craft beer or you know, spaces in public and whatever. There's a lot to that. We don't need to get into the weeds there. But the other side is that...
So on that note, a recent event, what's a charity that
this beer, we're currently drinking the last... can that cracked was mine, is begging for attention. This is my second beer. We packaged about two weeks ago today, and the charity is the New York Immigration Coalition. So they are an umbrella organization that support a variety of immigration-based focused charities, whether that is legal aid, English as a second language, food drives and churches, and there's a million, 200 plus, but a lot of different organizations. So I wanted to stand for something. And the other thing is I wanted to do something different. So I do the event-based and pop-ups because I think what we've done in the past, what a lot of other breweries have done in the past, is, all right, you make a lot of beers, you have your tap room, that's great. You want to do something at a bar, you say, all right, well, we've got 4 beers on tap. Could have got them at our tap room. Or you can come to this bar and just drink 4 of our beers and maybe someone you'd like to meet will be here. And that's fine. But that's not exactly exciting anymore. We've done that. We've all done that a million times. So what I want to do is bring you to a place you wouldn't normally have a beer event. So my first pop-up, true pop-up, was a coffee shop after hours. And everybody drank their beer out of mugs because proper glassware be damned. We're drinking out of tiny mason jars now. We just like had a party and danced all night and had a good time. And the second one, we took over a movie theater at Alamo Draft House. We watched Space Jam and drank the new beer, this beer. And it's just about introducing new experiences to craft beer along with drinking your beer. And not only is that hopefully, I hope, fun and interesting and different, but it means that, or it makes the space more approachable to people who maybe don't love hanging out in bars or don't love the old model or who feel that like they don't have room in a bar. I mean, just like the core of the issue is that bars where we hang out and where we do this tend to be dark and filled with dudes who look like the four of us. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you out of this one, Tara, but it's a lot of white dudes with beards. And unfortunately, that is not the it is not an equal makeup of the drinking populace. And that's
You have a mission behind this.
It is about making craft beer more inclusive, as is everybody else in this room. We all absolutely, I know, whether it is like a cornerstone or not, care about craft beer being more accessible and more inclusive.
So it has to be craft beer. This couldn't be a hard seltzer project. This wouldn't be a wine cooler project.
People have asked me. And while
you care about the beer,
I do.
So what is this beer again? Tell us what it is.
So this is it's a New England IPA, begging for attention, and it has Racao, Humal, and Equinot hops, and a little bit of rye, but is otherwise like I'm not reinventing the wheel. The goal with my beers is I want to make a beer that is the best representation of a style we understand, you understand, people understand, whatever, without being crazy complicated. I mean, like sour IPAs can be fun, and I love this one, and this is a phenomenal example. Both of what we'll drink, but there's also this sort of angle of like sour IPAs chock full of candy and extra tons and tons and tons of adjuncts. Where when you drink it, you can drink 5 ounces of it, and it's not pleasant to drink a lot of. And that is not the case with either of these. And don't need Johnny to defend himself.
You have a great palate. Hold on. Now we're gonna go to Little Blind back.
I feel personally attacked.
Back to Little Blind. So, Eric. So your backstory. So you told Liz about it, but why Little Blind? I know you guys had a side project, Sunday Beer, about a craft light lager.
Yeah.
What's Little Blind? And, you know, there's some art involved.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, I am a beer guy. I enjoy beer. And I resonate with a ton of what Gage says, because Sunday Beer, you know, slightly off topic, but like it's about having fun. Like our motto is, it's beer, don't be a hero. So we took a...
you have a project called Sunday
Beer. Yeah. So it's definitely like about having fun. And for us, Little Blind was kind of in the same vein. You know, for Drew, our brewer, just trying to get more experimental. Sour is where we tend to go. We do avoid lactose and some of the adjuncts. So this sour IPA is actually like a homegrown culture from Drew. And yeah, but Little Blind, so we actually collaborated with an artist based out of Ojai, California. And he just does some really fun, trippy stuff. And so we've just really enjoyed where kind of craft beer has gone, and this whole, like, the label's becoming a sort of piece of art. So we just thought it was a really cool way to kind of showcase some artists. So right now, you know, we work with him at Real Fun Wow, his Instagram handle. But yeah, that's, you know, beer is this, like, it's kind of this, become this thing that has gotten very, like, artisanal. And so, like, combining that with the label and the brand and really kind of playing up that whole artistic side of thing has become, like, a fun project within it. And, kind of getting that that otherworldly vibe, which is kind of going after what the taste we're going for, yet still hopefully approachable, something that you could actually drink 16 ounces of. And great. So, yeah, that's the vibe.
Let's keep tasting beer. I'm going to ask a question. I think that this might be for Tara first, but are there barriers to becoming a beer drinker?
Ooh, I love that question.
That's a big question, but I feel like that you guys in particular are attempting to get through that. I mean, I know you worked at Wolfer's, which is like famous for not just rosé wine, but the dry rosé cider that mm-hmm. everyone drinks. So, you know, what's your vision for reaching new customers? Are you trying to reach women as in a way that they're not being reached by, I think you wrote, male-centric packaging?
Yeah, I love that question, Jimmy. I think that if I were to blind serve the beers at this table to my friends who don't consider them craft beer drinkers, they would probably really enjoy them, because a lot of the styles that are really popular in craft beer are, you know, New England IPAs, low in bitterness, really fruit forward, or sour beers, which have a flavor profile that's more akin to a cider or a cocktail. And that's a really amazing shift towards making what I would call more accessible flavors. But I also think that there's a lot of education that needs to happen and accessibility that needs to happen, which goes back to what Gage said. So for us, part of that is getting our beer. One of our initial goals was we want to get into Whole Foods. And we wanted the Whole Foods shopper, which 62% of Whole Foods shoppers are women shopping during the day. And since in New York City you can't buy hard alcohol or wine in Whole Foods, we thought it would be a really great way to, you know, have a beer that is a little bit more in gender-neutral packaging that's playful, colorful, that attracts the female consumer base. But at the end of the day, our target market is to grow craft beer, and that means stealing share from hard seltzer and cider and wine and cocktails. Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, like, well, them, not pro you, blue hard seltzer. Sorry.
Well, I support you. Big beer is in decline. Craft beer is still growing, especially in New York. And I think that to continue to infuse growth in the industry, it's reaching outside of the typical craft beer drinker, which is why for us the tap room is so important, because we want to bring people into our space. Similar to Gage, we want to offer people an experience that's different than a typical tap room. And entice people to come in. That also leads to the way that we're marketing ourselves. So we've done tastings at places like Bloomingdale's headquarters, Elle Magazine. We're trying to put our beer where craft beer hasn't gone before so that we can entice some of those consumers. And, you know, I don't think we're reinventing the wheel. I just think that being outside of the craft beer industry with business experience and being women who are underrepresented in craft beer, it's just a little bit of a different perspective on what's going on in the market historically. And
so it's more about the marketing and just how you interact with people, but you're still making like solid quality beers.
It's, I mean, yeah, but like, I think marketing is not the right way to put it. And I don't mean to steal your thunder, but I think it's really important is that it is about where. It's about where you go, where you sell, where you show up as the people who are the brand. So for you to go to Bloomingdale's and Elle, places that have probably never had a craft beer tasting, especially a craft beer tasting from women, right? Because we have like three partial owners of breweries in New York City who are women. The rest are men.
There's only three.
I mean, that feels like a fair guess based on, I think I know everybody, and I'm sorry if I'm forgetting someone. But to do this, if you want to appeal, not only appeal, but truly like communicate with communities who are locked out, is about where you go. I mean, marketing, sure, you have to market. And packaging, you have to have good-looking packaging. You can't have bad art. But it's about where you go and that you go to those places that are underseen.
But product, you know, the liquid in the can is part of the marketing, because
most
someone could
part.
Well, yeah, someone could pick up you know, our 4-pack or 6-pack off the shelf, but if the beer isn't good, they're not going to come back. And if they taste it at the bar, they're not going to buy a full pint if it's not good. So I think the liquid is still, so I hate the term the liquid.
But
the beer still has to be really good. And, you know, going back to values and mission, millennial consumers care about brands that have values that are similar to them. More than 50% of millennial women know the origin story of their favorite brand, and a number of them also know the names of the founders of their favorite brand. So creating a connection with our end consumers is really important to us, and it requires putting ourselves out there, putting our story out there, and getting our beer in unexpected places. So I guess cheers to that.
Well, cheers. We're getting somewhere different. Gage, I didn't quite realize that you had this mission-oriented approach, and I'm really glad you're talking about it, because I knew you as a beer menus guy, and you had data. At one time, you were a data at your fingertips.
Mr. Computer.
You know what beers are moving. And
right.
So what about the new? What? So these new, I mean, you call them New York City breweries, but are you a brewery if you don't have a brewery?
Oh, that's an unfair question. I think, like, the just because you're contracting does not mean that you are not involved in the process. And I think that the question is to be posed to everybody, right? Like so I contract. I don't like do the whole of my brew front to back, like brew, cellar, package. I cannot. I'd have to be there every single day at a brewery that I don't own, far away from what I'm doing. But I do show up. And I write the recipe. We all write our recipes. We all show up for the important part of the processes. And then we trust the facility with whom we work to fill in the gaps. And someone can tell me if I'm speaking out of turn.
And then just but, their ingredients. So you'll use ingredients that brewery is getting.
You don't bring in your own ingredients. Well, I mean, I select what will go into my beer. I've written the recipe. I select, you know, what we're ordering, where we're ordering it from. Because, I mean, I'm making exclusively IPA right now. Unfortunately, I wish I could make other beers, but I can't sell other beers yet. So whatever. I go with IPA. And this beer, my begging for attention, has Racao. And Racao is a great hop. I love it. But buying spot hops, buying from other people's leftover contracts, which is what Johnny was describing, can be a hit or miss game. You cannot always get the best quality hops. So it's about choosing who you're buying from. So, for example, these are Funkworks from Colorado's Extra Racao. So I trust, because I trust their product and them as professionals, as brewers, that I'm getting a quality product. So, I mean, I am as involved, pretty involved in the process. I could be more. I will admit that. But just because I don't have a physical location and I'm not a brewer, it doesn't make me not a brewery and only a brand. There's a lot more. And, I mean, there are certainly, if we just move that line to a different place, there's plenty of people with physical breweries who are terrible at every other part of this. And I don't want to not call them brands. Is that a terrible? That's a bad catchphrase. Don't marry me to that. Don't save that. Forget that.
Well, let's do this. Let's go back to Eric. So the next beer we're drinking, we get a lot of beers to taste, and it's a good chance to tell about who's here.
Yeah, totally. So right now we're drinking a Zone Expansion. Little Blind. And Zone Expansion. We just did a double release. So this one it's heavily fruited. About 900 pounds of tangerine and peach, and that's with our
30 barrels.
This was a 15 barrel.
15.
Yeah. Oh. And then this was with yeah.
I'm glad you said there was fruit
Oregon
because
fruits, yeah.
I tasted the fruit.
Yeah,
that's perfect. One thing I can say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super. I mean, this is definitely a little bit of punch in the mouth. It's super tart and super fruity. So really, kind of just going after it with both of those ingredients.
So jumping to the next point, where do you sell? I mean, I know like Talia's been at, I've heard about them for a while. I know that Beer Table often carries them and they've told me about them. So to me, that's love a them. Seal of approval to me. They're a good beer seal, you know, establishment. Where are some places that you sell Little
Blind?
Yeah,
we're also at Beer Table in Grand Central.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah,
all of us.
I think we just did like 8 cases to them on this last release.
Nice.
I think that's Gavin.
Gavin.
And Noah.
Yeah. We love
next
you,
week,
Gavin.
A special episode, the beer
really
table
great.
Experts talking about Abbey style ales.
Nice. There you go.
It was surprising with 6 different Abbey style ales.
I want to say we're probably Little Blind has made it. This is our 5th release. We did 3 releases and then this 4th release was a double release. And so I want to say we've probably been in 75 to 100 accounts. So it's mostly, I mean, with Little Blind, just to, I guess, probably set the stage a little bit, it is a one and done type project. So we release a beer and then that's kind of it. It's done. So it really plays into the whole Rotation Nation thing. So we're not really trying to get on menus here. We're really just going after craft beer bars and obviously some of the off-premise stuff.
So what's cool? What's new? What's the next Little Blind?
What is the next Little Blind?
Yeah,
what's the next Little Blind?
Also,
yeah, I mean, so we actually gave our first try at a straight up double IPA, and so I, you know, sour has always been a part of it, and that will always be a part of what we're doing. I think we're gonna maybe give another try at just like a classic New England IPA.
So I don't mean to steal your thunder. This is about you.
No, that's
because you and Drew explained this to me.
You
at
said
the
that
as
twice
is
already, Gage.
Yeah. Well, because
what is
I'm
this stealing your thunder?
I'm teeing him up. What you guys did, you made the sour that we're drinking, and a double IPA.
Yeah.
And released them together, with the option that you would mix the cases so that people, consumers, and bars and whomever could blend them to make a third fun new beer. And I think that is fucking
is that really the point?
Dope.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
Yeah, that is. So, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, we haven't started. So this release was just like a week and a half ago, and we haven't gotten that messaging out there to the consumer. But yeah, I mean, we've only done sour IPAs up until this point. And so this last release was a double IPA and a fruited sour. So we're kind of having some fun and just back to just having fun like that. It's obviously a super silly thing, but a manual blend.
You guys are great.
Part of
we're going to have to take a short break. We'll be back in a minute on Beer Sessions Radio. See ya.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio. Hey, this is like the new New York City breweries, organized by Gage from Non Sequitur. We got a beer from Free Thought, also Little Blind and Talia. So we're switching back to Talia. So you get Johnny Osborne. So you guys set up, there's different things happening here. We're talking about like kind of the new face of New York City breweries, and each one of you is a little different. But Talia, you guys are the most traditional brewery in terms of the fact that you guys have been raising money, you started contracting, now you're opening a space, and you have a brewer. So Johnny, we talk a little bit about the sourcing you have to do for materials. Tell us about like how good beer you make. Like the beer that you make, your background, great. And you know, you makes like to beer. Make good beer. So this is about making good beer. So I've read some things about you guys. It's like you're not trying to make rosé wine. You're actually trying to make good beer, and your beer is good. And places like Beer Table have put their, you know, their thumbs up behind it. So tell us about the beer that you make. And let's taste one of yours, too, another one. Is there another Talia beer we can
there
try?
Is. All right. There is. We just poured a bunch of Gage's beer, and we'll put it to the side.
A Gun Hill beer. It's a Gun Hill
A Gun Hill Stout. You can't
we love
go wrong
Gun Hill.
With that.
Love you, Dave.
So right now, we're cracking open some Tropic Berry Tart Deco. So that's our highest rated beer on Untappd. And we're doing our next iteration in that style.
Just say one more. What is the beer? It's Talia.
This is Talia's Tropic Berry Tart Deco, 7.5% sour IPA. We're pursuing a flavor profile that is super fruit forward. We're using passion fruit, raspberry, and guava. Really full body and lots of mouthfeel, lots of texture. A consequential amount of acidity, but not enamel stripping. And really just going for a beer that we find to be highly accessible. We're hopping with Citra and Mosaic, and we're getting some of that character into the beer, boosting the aromatics with that, but not a hoppy beer per se. And then as far as pursuing great beer, I think that Terry and Leanne, they're homebrewers, and they know about the brewing process, and they knew about the styles of beers that they wanted to be pursuing and the portfolio of beers that they wanted to be pursuing, and that we're trying to create the best things that appeal to everybody. Not beer for everybody per se, but the styles that are working for all demographics. And we're looking at a lot of things that are popular right now. We're looking at IPAs, fruit forward, low bitterness IPAs. We're looking at sours, particularly fruit forward sours, sours that have extra elements on top.
Johnny, where did you work before? So you have a background as a brewer. So give us a little bit about your story. It helps build the cred.
Oh, yeah. So I've been in beer in some form or another since about 2012 and with breweries since 2014. Cut my teeth at Monday Night Brewing in Atlanta. Shout out to those guys. They're great. And I was actually primarily in operations and like just getting my hands into production. You know, they would let me twist some of the valves when they were already in the right place, that sort of thing. And then brewing primarily at Six Points R&D production facility for the last couple of years, Hot Minute at LIC Brewery. And that was a really great production environment to be a part of. Got to work with Eric Bockley, who is running the Six Point R&D department. He is the head brewer of Trillium, now doing TBD. Not quite sure.
Great. And then Tara, so, you know, as you guys are setting up, you know, you started as contracting, you were building the brand a little bit, gathering investors. At what point did you decide to hire a brewer, and how did you find Johnny? You know, that's an interesting process. Like, how do you find and hire good people?
Sourcing
as you're just building yourselves up.
Sourcing ingredients, sourcing people. It's all really important to building the business. I found Johnny on LinkedIn. He responded to my message, and at the time we were 6 or 8 weeks into the concept phase of what would be Talia. And we knew that we wanted a real brewer on board because 5 gallons doesn't scale to 8,000 or 9,000 cans in a go. So we started talking to Johnny to help us with vetting contract breweries and understanding, you know, ingredient sourcing, what might build a really great recipe that would be the right for our target market, the right beer for our target market, but also really attractive to, you know, the boutique beer bars, who are the people who are willing to take a chance on brands like us. So I think we all are thankful for how open-minded the New York City craft beer scene is to accepting new beer brands.
Okay, so this is December. It's rainy in New York, but it's going to be chilly. It's almost Christmas. It's almost Hanukkah. It's chilly. There's a beer that I'm craving, and I'll tell you guys at the end. But to test your real craft, I mean, I feel like, Eric, you've got some cred because you came from San Diego. You mentioned Alesmith and Stone, and I'm thinking of Old Green Flash. So we're going to test everybody's cred. What beer are you craving right now, this time of year in the Northeast? Who wants to go first?
Craving.
I'm craving.
Oh, man. You know what? I'm going to go first. I'm going to give you guys all a second to answer. The answer is Pilsner. I don't give a damn. I want nothing else. Especially as a brewery that makes only IPA. God, all I want is a Pilsner. But.
Is there a brand?
No, any Pilsner.
Any Pilsner.
Any Pilsner will do. Miller High Life, Tipo Pils. I don't care. I'm not particular.
Okay, next. Johnny's ready to say.
I want to say the cred answer is Sierra Nevada Celebration Ale. personal, I'm always going, literally always, not seasonally, Schlenkerla, their Helles. Yeah.
Helles Lager. That's a good one. Okay. Tara?
Ooh. I grew up in Pennsylvania, so the closest.
Oh, wait, what?
Yeah.
Same?
The closest.
Is that a common thread there,
Gage? I didn't know that was the case. We know each other fairly well. Our dogs are friends, but I don't know this about her.
I'm a recovering Pennsylvanian.
Same. Ooh. You know, I'm going to tell people that.
Oh.
All right, let's hear it.
But not from the beer, because I grew up just north of Delaware, so Dogfish Head and Victory.
What are you craving?
I was going to say Victory Sour Monkey or Dogfish Head 90 Minute IPA. Those are kind of some of my, you know, gateway drug beers.
But that's like, it's craving right now for this time of year. Eric, craving a beer right now?
Well, it's what Johnny said. Sierra Nevada Celebration. That's about kind of as good as it gets for me. Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is probably my favorite beer of all time. Mm. So for me, that beer and that company is about as good as it gets. So that's something, a true, like, you can look forward
to
it.
I'll toast to that. That's a great beer for this time of year, and I could crave that. I'll tell you what I was craving. Today, before the show, I was looking at some of my favorite beer Instagram accounts, and I'm a big fan of Foam Brewers up in Vermont. Mm-hmm. They like to work with a lot of local ingredients. They came down this summer, did something with us. They have some new coffee collaboration stout, and I thought, that's kind of what I'm thinking about today. My craving beer was, it's old school, but I just had it a couple weeks ago, Sam Smith Oatmeal Stout.
Oh, man.
You know, so it's still, it's like, it's got the right alcohol level, but it's got that mouthfeel. And to me, that's what brings it back to beer, is that there's a beer that I've had that I want, not just once, but I want like 10 of them. And I keep remembering it. So if you have any memories like that, that's what I'm trying to think about. And I'm trying to get you guys to have some soul. I know you guys got the marketing down. You got the branding. I love and hate that everyone has cans with all this cool art. But I'm like, do I actually drink the art? I don't. So at the end of the day, it is about the liquid. And for me, it's
coming back. I've got a collection of...
And we need one more beer, too. So
I'm two cans deep, but I am building a collection. I think that's the right way to put it. In my apartment. Of all of the nice cans with nice art. Eventually, I'll peel them off the can, make a framed piece, put them all together. Man, I don't know. It can be nice. You can keep them. People do it. You should do it.
So let's fill
your home.
Now, more news. So business in New York City. So you guys are now all breweries in New York City. There's things like the New York City Brewers Guild. So what direction should or will the brewers in the city be taking? There's New York City Beer Week that's successful. You guys are now all going to be players in it, right? Because you're all, technically, even as contract breweries, you can be part of the New York City Brewers Guild.
I paid my guild dues. I'm going to be there.
Same. I think that there is a really big interest in getting more involved in the community of New York City. So, I think that means finding ways to showcase New York City brewed in the city and... engaging with either other local makers or other community groups. So my hope for 2020 is that we can find more ways to engage with the communities that support craft beer. So I think a lot of the local neighborhoods have shown that the foot traffic is amazing for supporting breweries, and, you know, not, especially in the dead of winter, you're not taking a train. I mean, maybe some people would, but an hour to get to a brewery. So I would love to give back to the local community, and that's something we hope to do once we open our doors. And, you know, while we're brewing great beer, we're actually giving away some cases for the holiday season to a couple of different nonprofits, including the Museum of Food and Drink and a restaurant called Emma's Torch, which actually trains refugees how to cook. And so that's an easy thing for us to do to support those entities. But I think it can go beyond that to engage the community.
Great. What about you, Eric? I mean, I'm interested in what you guys did, because you have a slightly different approach. Like Gage was talking about non sequitur, doing pop-up events, creating like, you know, a vibe. But you guys, the Sunday beer thing, did you actually have like one cooler and one store where you sold the beer out of? I mean, have you done anything like that?
Yeah, actually, well, funny enough, we actually do partner with a place in the Navy Yard that we kind of share warehouse space with, where we have an entire fridge just filled of Sunday beer and nothing else. But yeah,
but that's a market, that's a sales option.
Yeah.
To take over an entire fridge in the store. And
yeah, that's right. I think that was a little bit of a sweetheart deal. But yeah, I mean, as far as like where NYC beer is headed, I think there's a lot of flexibility actually within the licenses and what seems to be sort of a strict, thing, and a lot of red tape there. And, you know, I think that whole article on McKellar came out, I don't know if it was like a year ago, and just like kind of all these interesting things they're doing. I think people are maybe much less tied to the classic brick and mortar brewery and getting pretty interested in something like the non sequitur thing. I think is really great. Just the whole events and fun around it and building community. And kind of at the end of the day, I think that's what we're all trying to do, is build a community and tap into this larger community. And then you try to build a smaller community based around your brand and what you're doing within that. And I mean, we're just, yeah, all about having fun. So like, you know, we're pretty open to like whatever model people do it. And I would like to just see more of it. I think seeing non sequitur is just such a fun thing to see, like people's take on where beer can go. And yeah, I think it's great.
The other thing is you guys are all making good beer. Like there's not a bad beer.
People do say that about all three of us, not just me.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like you said, I think before, the barrier to entry is higher because we're just so much further in the cycle. So you just can't come to market with a bad beer these days. I mean, obviously, if you're doing lots of releases, you're probably going to miss if you're getting experimental. But yeah, it's just there's so much a higher standard. But then again, the industry's been around a little longer, so you have a lot more people like Johnny, who, you know, you can poach someone who's actually been in it, and it's not just home brewers anymore with a dream. You get people who are actually industry people now.
Johnny?
I was going to say, we're kind of at an interesting point where...
Are you going to get poached?
He's already been poached.
Already.
Yeah, it's done.
Quick turnover, so yeah. Hopefully...
I'm done getting poached. But yeah, I think we're at an interesting point where people with a vision to actually pursue the traditional brick and mortar brewery model, yes, absolutely. Super high barrier to entry. Super high barrier to entry, particularly within New York. That's why we're an underserved market. But we do have the opportunity for brands like Volblind, Non Sequitur, and the way we're getting started with this excess capacity and friendly laws like from New York to allow us to do these sorts of things. That gives us a chance to bring brands to fruition in whatever model. Like,
well, let's make a toast to New York State.
Thank you, New York State.
Since 2012, a lot of reforms, and we've done quite a few shows about it. We're going to have to wrap up soon, but Gage, quickly, we just tasted a Free Thought. So Free Thought is one of the other breweries that...
Free Thought is one of our friends. So Free Thought, Ben and... I wish I remembered the rest of the name.
Ryan?
Sorry, y'all. So Ben is from... the restaurant
Blue Hill.
Thank you. He's the beverage director.
So he's a fine dining guy.
And the whole thing with Free Thought is making beers that are inspired by food or beverage or other things, not inspired by beer. So he's trying to do weird stuff. So the beer that we're currently drinking, called Temporo, is a sour ale brewed with plums, cardamom, and rose water. We may not get into it. He has another one that is a sour with... let me wipe the condensation off here. Fennel pollen, honey, milk, sugar, and lemon.
Sounds like a good barbecue ingredient stacking. I'll tell you.
They're doing some really interesting things. And this is a really complex beer. There's a lot to it. I'm appreciating... These are flavors that I've not really had in beer. So they're really trying to, something like reinventing the wheel. They're experimenting, and that's worth doing.
And then there was one more brand that didn't get to come
Public
on.
Access Liquids, yeah.
And what is he making?
So Public Access is making all manner of beer. I think they've made IPA, they've made sour, they've made some funky stuff. And Ramon, who's behind Public Access, you can find him at Proletariat in the East Village, and that's where he's based.
That's great. Guys, this has been an awesome show. We covered a lot of bases. Gage, thank you so much for putting the show together. Let's go around the room, and everybody just one more time say their name and where they're from.
Yeah, Eric Schultz, I'm with Little Blind.
Johnny Osborne, Talea Beer Company.
Tara Hinkinson, Talea Beer Company.
Gage and Nelson from Non Sequitur Beer Project.
He brought his service.
He's here. My dog is here, man. Sitting on my lap.
Well, thanks so much for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. If you have questions for us at Beer Sessions Radio, email us at askbeersessionsradio@gmail.com and we'll answer on the air. Next week, we're doing a tasting of Belgian triple styles and Abbey Ales with the beer table experts. I'm Jimmy Carboni.
Really
thanks for our producer. Yeah, man. Dylan Hoyer, our producer, and our intern, Kevin Chang Barnum, and our engineer, Matt Patterson. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, guys. Woo!
Yeah.
All right. Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.